down sleeping. She stayed by your side for a few hours, but she fell asleep in her chair. I found her a bed.
A few hours? How long have I been here?
About 16 hours. It is almost dawn.
Well, where's Rose? Is she here too?
She was in the lab.
In the lab? The lab is... No. She wasn't there. She went to get more cinnamon buns. She said she would.
She never left.
No. No, she said she would get more cinnamon buns. She went to get some. She said she would get more for Kara. You see, Rose and I, we ate all the pastries. Kara was mad at us. Rose said she would go and get some more. She wasn't in the lab.
Mr. Coutu.
Rose, she cared about the little things. She cared about us. She made sure we knew we were appreciated every day. Little things, you know, coffee, cake. She found some Kinder eggs somehow. She knew they reminded me of home. She would drop one at my station every now and then. She could have left them in my locker. Anywhere, really, but she took time to take the elevator up to the sphere before I'd walk in, just because she thought it would make a better surprise. So, you see, she would have made sure Kara didn't stay angry. She would have gone to get more pastry.
Mr. Couture.
She said...
Vincent! She's gone.
Part 4. Body Blow. File number 211. Interview with Robert Woodhull. Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs. Location, White House, Washington, D.C.
I feel as though I have been summoned by the principal.
The reports are in. I thought you'd like to know how much damage you've caused.
It was an accident. Admittedly a foreseeable one, but an accident nonetheless.
Let's talk infrastructure first. You have obliterated two buildings on Van Driver Street. Just about a half of runway 17L-35R. As well as the east end of Concourse B. Fortunately, there were no planes leaving out of the east end gates. They estimate the damage will be around $300 million.
I am not very good with numbers. I assume this is a lot?
How about this number, smartass? 311. That's the number of people you killed.
How could there be so many? You said there were no departures in the portion of Terminal B that was destroyed.
There were only a few employees in the terminal. Concession stand workers, janitors, some ground crew in the tarmac just outside. 42 people in total. All of them Americans. There was, however, an Iceland Air Boeing 757 on the runway when it happened. I think it goes without saying that all on board have perished since the plane itself doesn't exist anymore. The flight was almost full. 193 passengers dead, 6 crew members. Most were Icelanders. Icelandic? Anyway, 18 were Americans. There was also a Dash 8 taxiing to Terminal B. 51 dead. And you took out the tail end of a United Airbus 320. That's another 19. They were lucky. Only the last 3 rows of passengers were vaporized, along with 1 crew member. 311 people in total, 312 with your scientist. 119 Americans, about 200 people from Iceland, 24 Canadians, and a few people from 9 more countries whose governments are publicly blaming us, rightfully so, I might add, and demanding an explanation. Some of them will get over it, but you can definitely add Iceland to the list of countries that want bad things to happen to us.
Do we really need Iceland on our side?
Well, we need someone on our side.
Perhaps.
That's it. One snide remark about Iceland? No expression of remorse? No apology? Not one word about the people you killed?
Could I erase 312 deaths with a few heartfelt words? Then no, I do not see the point.
It might make you at least appear like a human being. In any case, you're probably the only person on the planet who doesn't want to talk about it. There's pretty much nothing else on television anywhere in the world. Strangely, most channels are going the human interest route.
Why is that so strange?
A giant robot magically dematerializes everything for half a mile?
People will not understand that part. Crying mothers are accessible. I find it rather typical.
Maybe you're right. Heartbreaking stories, though. You should hear some of them. Husband surprised his wife and three kids with tickets to Paris for their anniversary. There is a 14-year-old girl in Memphis who will die in the next few hours because the heart she needed was on the Dash 8 that vanished. Lots of twin stories. Both twins on the plane, one twin on the plane. There was a young couple coming home from Thailand with the daughter they'd been waiting
for. You can stop. What are they saying about the robot?
Anything and everything. Speculations range from a giant Mayan statue to, well, to pretty much what it really is. But everyone is completely baffled by whatever made the whole. The best explanation they came up with so far is some amazingly fast cover-up on our part. The press is suggesting we somehow got rid of all the debris from a large explosion in less than 10 minutes. Regardless, we're going to have to come up with something. I'll meet with the president this afternoon and figure out the best course of action.
That will not be necessary. The president already knows what he will do.
What are you talking about?
He and I met this morning, and we are in agreement.
How dare you talk to the president without speaking to me first? I tell you what he wants, not the other way around.
You can take it up with him if you want. He was not in any way obligated to talk to me.
I will. As soon as this meeting's over.
That will not be possible, I'm sorry to say. He is in New York, meeting with the Security Council. He will make a public announcement this afternoon.
What's the cover story?
There is no cover story. He is going to tell them exactly what they saw.
You mean he's going to tell the world that aliens left giant robot parts on Earth thousands of years ago? And that we've been secretly assembling them in an underground base? All in the hopes of keeping it to ourselves?
He will probably want to reformulate the last part, but if you turn on CNN at 3 p.m., that is more or less what you will hear.
He's completely lost his mind.
He seemed coherent enough when I met him this morning.
He's gonna sound like a goddamn lunatic!
72 hours ago, a giant robotic figure, about 20 stories tall, was seen by just about every living soul on this planet, after it created a half-mile-wide, perfectly spherical crater, obliterating part of Denver International Airport. What would you suggest? Routine military exercise? Weather balloons? I should also point out that the leaders of several countries already know that we did not build it ourselves, since we had to steal the pieces from them.
He's going to end his political career.
He is trying to prevent World War III.
Do you really think the other governments are just going to say, oh, it's an alien thing, never mind, then carry on?
They will have questions, I have no doubt. They will want reassurances, but they will also have to come to terms with the idea that we are not alone in the universe. The president is hoping that realization is enough to bring everyone to some sort of agreement.
Okay. So we tell the Russians, the Chinese, the French government. Why go the extra mile and tell the whole world? Don't you think the population might react, let's say, unfavorably to aliens and a giant government conspiracy to boot?
I do not believe the election is foremost in his mind at this juncture.
I wasn't suggesting he might lose votes. I was thinking something more along the lines of mass hysteria.
That will not happen. People have been sufficiently desensitized.
What?
Desensitized. Made less sensitive. People have seen too many alien movies to be completely shocked by their existence. You expose someone to something long enough, and they become desensitized.
We're talking about the real McCoy here, not some guy in a rubber suit on television.
It does not matter. You train your soldiers to kill using video games. They blow enough people up on their computer and it becomes easier for them to kill with a real weapon. Why do you think your government funds so many war and terrorism movies? Hollywood does your dirty work for you. Had 9/11 happened 20 years earlier, the country would have been in chaos. But people have seen enough bad things on their television screen to prepare them for just about anything. We do not really need to talk about government conspiracies.
So what's he going to do?
My understanding is that he will offer a compromise.
Are you willing to share that thing? If they can't have it, I don't think they'll let us keep it either.
That is what I meant by a compromise.
So we'll share it with them?
Not exactly.
Then what? We'll just get rid of it?
Precisely.
Seems a little stupid to violate every international treaty we signed, get a bunch of people killed, only to destroy the very thing we were trying to get. You'd be willing to do that?
I would not.
Didn't think so.
In any event, I am not entirely certain that we could. Destroy it, I mean.
So what then?
My suggestion to the president was to drop it in the Puerto Rico Trench.
Where's that?
Near Puerto Rico.
Very funny.
It is the deepest part of the Atlantic, about 5 miles deep.
Could we get it back?
Not at the present. That is the idea.
You mean we couldn't reach it if we wanted to?
We probably could. There are deep-sea vehicles capable of reaching these depths. James Cameron went 6.8 miles deep in a one-man submarine.
The filmmaker?
Yes. But one man and submarine were the important words. These are very small craft, incapable of bringing back up anything that massive, even in pieces. We could reach it, but we could not bring it back. It is a solution drastic enough to meet the demands of our current predicament, but it is not a permanent solution. Someday, soon, a new technology will exist, and we can revisit the situation. You are atypically silent, my dear Robert.
You know what? I don't believe you. You had me for a moment. But you're not the type to give up on something so big so easily. No pun intended.
Dr. Franklin is dead. Over 300 people died in Denver. And we are on the brink of a global conflict. Easily is not the first word that comes to mind.
See, I think you're an arrogant, self-absorbed son of a bitch. But you're also a cold, calculated son of a bitch. You're the kind of guy who has backup plans for his backup plans. I don't believe for a second that you'd walk into something that big without a plan B.
That is enough compliments for one day. I do have a plan B. Drop the parts in the Puerto Rico Trench and fetch them back in a few years when we are able to.
I forgot to mention, I don't think patience is one of your best qualities, but whatever you say. Obviously, you wouldn't tell me if you had a plan. What will you do with your team? What's left of it, anyway?
They will go back to their lives. Chief Resnick is already flying missions out of Lewis McChord.
Wasn't she grounded? Her file says she has a bad eye.
You should take another look.
You falsified her personnel file?
I did no such thing. Everything that was in her file is still there. Someone may, however, have gone slightly overboard with the black marker while redacting it.
Oh, very nice of you. I didn't peg you as a romantic.
I did not say that I did anything. I said someone may have. However, I find it more productive to keep my promises. We may meet her in the future, and I would not want her holding a grudge.
What about the French kid? I mean, French-Canadian. You know what I mean.
Mr. Couture, unfortunately, is on his own.
Not so romantic after all, I guess. After everything he did for you, you're going to send him back home?
It was his choice. I offered him counseling. I called in a few favors and found him employment at DARPA. He declined both. He is not in the best state of mind.
You think? Where is he now?
Probably over the Great Lakes. His flight left at 10 o'clock this morning.
File number 229. Interview with CW4 Kara Resnick, United States Army. Location, Joint Base Lewis McChord, Washington State.
How long has it been, Ms. Resnick?
Since we last met, or since Dr. Franklin died?
Would not the answer be the same?
Pretty much. And I'm sure you know the answer better than I do.
I meant to ask how long it had been since we last met. And I genuinely do not know. I would say 6 or 7 months.
9.
I see you were promoted. I'm happy for you.
I'm not. I barely get to fly since I made CW4. I spend most of my time planning missions. It's funny, I never paid much attention to any of it before. I just went to mission briefings and I flew my bird. I never really thought about how long it took someone to work out all the tiny details of my 5-hour flight. Well, now I know. I swear my head will explode if I have to spend another minute staring at a map. They're all desert maps, too. I spend hours staring at gigantic beige pieces of paper, squinting to figure out if one little square is 10 feet higher than the one next to it.
I take it you did not ask for that promotion.
God, no. They called me in one day and broke the news. They said I have good leadership skills. How does that make me fit to look at maps and weather reports?
People often confuse leadership with managerial skills. I agree with their assessment. You certainly have the ability to inspire people. Minutia, on the other hand, might not be your forte. That being said, even if you are not the most organized person in the world, it would be a shame not to let everyone benefit from your experience and wisdom. Can I ask how Mr. Couture is doing?
You tell me. Last time I heard from him, he'd just gotten back to Montreal. That was also 9 months ago. He's either not taking my calls or he's gone somewhere else. I guess he could be anywhere by now.
He is still in Montreal. I take it this is not the high point of your relationship.
I should have known it wouldn't last.
Your relationship?
No. You're asking questions you don't already know the answer to. I thought something bad might have happened to him. It's nice to know he just doesn't want to talk to me. What's he doing now?
That is a lot of cynicism to fit into just 3 sentences.
I don't know what to tell you. He just left. After her death, it's all he could think about. It just ripped apart whatever was holding him together.
I spoke to you both after the incident. Unless you hid something important from me, it seems clear that neither of you are to blame for what happened.
We didn't keep anything from you. But none of it would have happened if we'd listened to Dr. Franklin. Vincent chose not to. It's his legs that gave up, his hands that pushed those buttons. I know I'm as responsible as he is, maybe more. I was trained to listen to others, but I can't blame him for thinking he killed her. He did. I killed her, too.
Everyone knew there were risks involved, especially Dr. Franklin.
It's one thing to risk your own life. It's fairly easy to rationalize the deaths of strangers, to shoulder the death of a friend, someone you know. That's a completely different thing.
I would venture with some measure of certainty that she would not want either of you to blame yourself for her death.
I know she wouldn't. There wasn't a mean bone in her body. Somehow, it doesn't make me feel any better about what happened. At least I know what to expect. I lost people that were close to me before. I lost family. I lost people on missions. I know how long I'll feel like this. I know what I'll be feeling later. Denial, grief, resentment. We're predictable little creatures. But I'm worried about Vincent. He doesn't know what's coming. I'd like to know how he's doing.
I am not worried for his life, if that is what you are asking. He is... You are right. He is devastated by the passing of Dr. Franklin. That much is obvious. However, you can find some comfort in the fact that it is obvious. He has no problems expressing his feelings of loss, his guilt, his anger over what happened. His emotions are well-defined, and he is coherent in expressing them. In time, he will come back.
I'm not so sure. What does he do now?
I'm not certain he has a source of income. He was making model ships when I visited.
Ships? Like, toys?
Scaled model ships from World War II. I am not an expert, but some seemed quite elaborate. Some of them must have close to 1,000 pieces. Building them requires a certain set of skills, a lot of patience, and attention to detail. Yes, you could call them toys.
And that's all he does?
For most of the day, yes. I realize it does not sound extremely encouraging, but it gives him something to focus on. I would rather see him work on a 1-200 scale USS Arizona than lie in bed all day.
Does he eat? Does he bathe?
I believe so, although shaving seems to have made way for other, more important tasks in his daily routine. We keep talking about Mr. Couture. But it is you I came to see. How do you feel?
I feel numb.
What do you mean?
After something this intense, everything else just... things that would have had you up in arms before now seem so utterly trivial. Nothing really matters. You start to ignore little things because they're little things. You compromise, you rationalize. Soon you look at yourself in the mirror and you don't recognize the person staring back at you. But, you know, I'm alive. I'm okay. I wake up every day and I get out of bed thinking today might be just a bit better than yesterday. Most of the time it is. Show must go on, as they say.
Do you have any vacation time coming?
I don't think a vacation is really what I need right now.
I was not making conversation. I am inquiring as to whether or not you could take a short leave of absence, not about your predispositions.
I don't know. Wasn't I just on extended leave for about 2 years? I never really thought about asking for more since I came back.
Would it surprise you to know that you have accrued 22.5 days of leave since your reassignment at Fort Carson?
I forgot who I was talking to. I suppose in a minute you'll tell me that I've already put in for some leave.
You have. But I want you to feel perfectly comfortable should you wish to reconsider.
I'm free to reconsider taking the leave of absence I never asked for? Typical. I should have known you didn't come here just to see how I was doing.
I did. I came here specifically to see how you were doing, and to ask for your help, if you appeared capable.
What is it you want me to do?
I want you to locate someone for me.
Can't you get any of your special forces friends to do it?
The military are not involved in this operation. In fact, it is critical that no one working for the U.S. government be involved in any way.
Except for me.
Except for you.
So, where am I taking this much-needed vacation?
Sarajevo.
Really? This better be good.
You will absolutely love Sarajevo. It is one of my favorite places in the world. By the time you leave, you will wish you did not have to.
And what am I doing in lovely Bosnia?
You should try and visit Mostar, if time permits. But aside from ancient cities and the usual tourist attractions... you are attending the Sarajevo Film Festival.
Of course. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
You will catch the premiere of Oprosti mi, Mina. It is a very small film by a young Serb cineast named Goran Lukic. He is someone I know and trust. He will be your guide in Bosnia.
What does Oprosti Mina mean?
Oprosti mi, Mina. Mina is a name. Oprosti mi means forgive me.
Sounds like a nice guy.
Goran is actually one of the kindest, most selfless people I have ever met.
Coming from you, I'm not really sure what that means. When will he be expecting me?
He will not be expecting anyone. He will, however, host a small party at Zlatna Ribica after the premiere. You will make an appearance and congratulate him on his movie. When no one else is around, you will remind him that he never paid for the plumber in Belgrade.
What's that, some sort of code?
No, not a code. More like a subtle metaphor.
Why don't you just contact him yourself? You seem to like him. He might enjoy talking to you again.
I assure you he would not.
How do you know him?
I assisted in his interrogation during the war.
You mean you helped torture him?
It is, as most things are, a matter of personal and historical perspective. In CIA parlance, we were given an alternative set of procedures. Suffice it to say that, however unpleasant the experience might have been, he is indebted to me. You will procure some inconspicuous clothing and ask him to take you to Srebrenica. It is a small mountain town at the east end of Bosnia.
Why does that ring a bell?
Thousands of Bosnian Muslims were rounded up and slaughtered there in the mid-90s. Once you reach Srebrenica, you will try and find a woman called Fata.
Fata who?
I do not know her last name, nor do I know where she lives. I can tell you that she had three sons and one daughter. Her oldest son worked in the salt mines of Srebrenica with her husband. They might have come into town for work every day from one of the surrounding villages.
Really? That's all you have? Do you know which village she might have come from?
I do not have that information. Unfortunately, the Serbs also destroyed hundreds of villages during the war. Hers may no longer exist. She would be in her early 50s by now. I know she was well-liked by everyone, and that she might have served as some sort of informal nurse.
How will I know I found the right person? Unless I'm mistaken, Fata is short for Fatima. I'm going to take a wild guess and say that's probably not the most unique name for a Muslim woman. Sounds a lot like, hey, go find John in New York.
You will know when you find her. Talk about the war. She will have stories to tell.
How long do I have?
You requested 2 weeks of vacation.
When?
The premiere is on the 5th. You leave Saturday.
And let's assume I find this Fata of yours. What do I need her to do?
Nothing. She needs to do nothing. I only need to know where to find her. I may need her in the future.
For what?
Nothing you should concern yourself with. Hopefully it will never come to that, and you will have a worthwhile experience visiting the remote corners of Bosnia. Now, if you will excuse me, I have to be on a plane in 1 hour.
Sir?
What is it?
Thank you.
File number 230. Interview with unknown subject. Location: New Dynasty Chinese Restaurant, DuPont Circle, Washington, D.C.
Begin recording. It is almost noon. I am waiting for the man who contacted me this morning on a classified number. I am sitting by the window. There is a sniper across the street with a clear view of my table. There is a short, stocky, old man entering the restaurant. He appears to be in his 60s or early 70s. He is wearing a tan trench coat, about 2 sizes too small, and a brim hat. He has no eyebrows. I sincerely hope he is not the man I'm waiting for. Unfortunately, he is now approaching my table with a large smile on his face.
Hello, sir. I am so happy to finally meet you. I've heard so much about you.
I seriously hope not, for your sake. Please be aware that this conversation is being recorded.
I'm now perfectly aware. Thank you. Do you know who I am?
I have absolutely no idea who you are, and I do not particularly care to find out. I want to hear what you know about me, who gave you that information, and what you intend to do with it.
Oh, you're upset because I mentioned your son on the phone. I didn't mean to stir up bad memories. As I said, you have my deepest sympathies. I can't tell you how I know what I know, but you can trust me when I say you have nothing to fear from me. Your secret is perfectly safe.
Listen to me very carefully, for I will only say this once. If you value your life in any way, you will not mention my son to me or to anyone else ever again. You will tell me exactly what you know. And if I am satisfied with your answer, you will be allowed to leave this place unharmed.
That's a bit rude, don't you think? What's the signal?
What signal?
The one for the sniper across the street. It's okay. You can show me. He's sound asleep. By the way, get the man some food next time. Poor fellow would have had to watch us eat for an hour. So, let's start this again, shall we? Would you care to guess who I am?
I would not.
Please, take a guess.
You are a retired clown who lost his eyebrows in a tragic fire-juggling accident.
Okay. No guessing, then. You can call me Mr. Burns.
That is a horrible alias.
It's my last name, thank you very much.
What do you want?
I'm here because we have a friend in common. You should try the Kung Pao chicken.
Thank you, I am still looking at the menu. And who might that friend be?
I don't believe you know her name, but she's a very special friend. Someone who had a very, very large place in your heart. Someone whom I understand you recently lost touch with.
I am listening.
Ah, finally! Now that I have your attention, it's your turn to listen very carefully to what I'm about to say. Put the menu down and get the Kung Pao chicken. The Indonesian rice is also very good, but you have to try the chicken.
I should warn you that I have little or no sense of humor, and very little patience.
Don't be modest. You have a great sense of humor. You're a little phlegmatic, I agree, but it's there. I see it. Okay. You look like you get grumpy when you're hungry, so I'll just move right along. Do you like stories? I hope you do. I'm gonna tell you a story that I was told as a child. It has a bit of everything. Love, war, betrayal. I'm sure you'll like it. A very long time ago, there was a vast empire. I mean vast. It literally spanned thousands of colonies. It was ruled by extremely powerful people. They believed that each colony should evolve at its own pace and be free to rule itself. They would intervene as little as they could, only to preserve life or defend the interests of the empire. They were a very wise people. A race of artists and engineers that had an unmatched understanding of the makeup of the universe. They were able to build just about anything, to manipulate matter and harness energy in ways that no one else could. One of the colonies was ruled by a warrior race. What they lacked in sophistication and intelligence, they made up for with strength and grit. Their king, a legendary warrior, ruled over millions. Having mined most of the ore in his own land, he tried to conquer a neighboring people to exploit their natural resources. The empire sent several ships to intervene. The warrior king was captured, tried, and sentenced to a life of imprisonment. Over time, he was allowed to leave his jail, and eventually he was permitted to live freely in the empire's metropolis, but he could never return home to his people. In the capital, he worked as a... there's no word for it. Yeah, personal trainer is the closest thing I can think of, but that sounds silly. Anyway, this is how he met. Can you guess? Can you guess? A princess! The daughter of the emperor himself. He trained the princess for a few hours every day. Of course, it didn't take them long to fall for each other. They kept their relationship a secret for a while. But when the princess reached the age of marriage, she introduced the warrior king to her father. Let's just say he did not approve. The fallen king was sent back to prison. The princess was forbidden to see him, but, you know, teenagers, she did. She did a lot more than that, actually. One night, she set a fire to lure the guards away and help their lover escape. The warrior king wanted to run away, but the princess was stubborn as a mule and didn't want to leave her whole life and family behind. So instead of doing the sensible thing, she brought her lover to the palace to confront her father. Seems hard to imagine that he went along with that, but like I said, his people were not known for their intelligence. And, let's face it, we all do stupid things when it comes to women. So, confront him she did. What started as a discussion soon turned into an argument. Words were exchanged, tempers were flaring. The emperor's people are known for their calm demeanor, but family has a way of bringing out the worst in people. Every people. The emperor raised his hand to strike his daughter, and the warrior king quickly got between them. The emperor had never fought anyone. Never wielded a sword, had never done any manual labor, so to say that he was overmatched would be an understatement. Within seconds, the emperor was on his back with a sword to his throat. It was only the princess screaming for him to show mercy that stopped the warrior king from plunging his blade into the emperor's heart. The royal guard eventually came in and the two lovers were arrested. The emperor was deeply wounded by his daughter's betrayal. He would never really be the same after that. But no matter how deep his sorrow, he could never bring himself to kill his own flesh and blood. Instead, his daughter would spend the rest of her life in the very cell her lover was jailed in. He had a different fate in mind for the warrior king. Since he had spared his life in the palace, the emperor would return the favor. Banishment would be his sentence, but not just for him, for his people as well. Massive ships were built in industrial colonies, and the warrior king's entire people, tens of millions, were sent away, never to return.
I am assuming there will be a point to this fable sometime in the near future.
There will indeed, but the best part is the story. You should try to enjoy it. The emperor was no fool. He knew that he had just made a powerful enemy. It might be years, decades, centuries even, but someday these people would seek vengeance for their exile. This was not something one would forget. They would pass on the hatred from generation to generation until the day their honor was restored. Preparing for an inevitable war, the emperor had giant machines built in his people's image. Indestructible weapons so powerful they could level a village or kill 10,000 men in a matter of seconds. Thousands of these giants were built and sent to every corner of the empire. There was one small colony at the far end of the realm. It was still in the early stages of its evolution and had received little attention from the empire in the past, but the emperor insisted that they be protected as well. 12 weapons were sent to the colony, along with a small detachment of soldiers to operate them. 6 of them were built to resemble males, 6 were female. Technology was nearly non-existent in the colony, and these giant machines that walked amongst men were instantly seen as gods and goddesses. They called them Titta. Years passed. Centuries went by, but the war never came. After more than 2,000 years, the machines were removed from the colony. One was left behind, a female-looking giant the people called Deimos. She was dismantled, and her parts were scattered across the colony. It was hoped that when the people had reached a certain stage in their evolution, they would rediscover the machine and use it to defend themselves should the war ever come.
What of the soldiers who were sent with it?
Excellent question. I see you're paying attention. They had a life expectancy about 3 times that of the colony's inhabitants, but this was still a multi-generational mission. When the machines were called back, the direct descendants of the soldiers, those whose blood was pure, were sent home as well. But over the centuries, some of the male soldiers had chosen women from the colony as spouses and eventually began to have children. These half-breeds, as they called them, were anatomically similar to the indigenous population, but had the superior intellectual and physical abilities of their alien parent. They were left behind when the soldiers left. They assimilated with the colony's inhabitants. Because of their abilities and more advanced knowledge of science, many of them and many of their descendants rose to positions of power or fame.
There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. The same became mighty men which were of old, men of renown.
So, you know this story already.
This is from the Bible, Genesis 6:4.
Like I said, it's a good story. Many people have told it.
How much of it is true?
Maybe all of it. Maybe none of it is true. You have to decide for yourself. Stories are there to entertain, preserve history, or serve a societal purpose of some kind. I think this one does a bit of everything.
You are one of them, are you not? You are one of their descendants.
I'm just an old man who likes to tell stories.
Can you help us? Can you help us control her?
I can do no such thing. Even if I knew what you were talking about.
Then why tell us? Why come to me?
How about another story? I'm afraid this one does not have such a happy ending.
By all means.
Here we go. There was a man who lived in a small cabin in the woods with his 2 teenage boys. It was the middle of winter, and there was a humongous storm coming. Soon, all the roads would be closed, and they would be completely cut off from civilization.
I am listening.
I'm sorry. This sounds a little macabre already, and I haven't even mentioned the shotgun. Let's lighten things up a bit, shall we? I know you like the other story, so let's make the man a king in this one as well. He was a powerful king in medieval times, a formidable warrior who inspired fear and respect. He was believed to have a magic sword that made him immortal and impossible to defeat. None of it was true, of course. He was just really good with a sword. The king had 2 children, both teenage boys. One day, the king was asked to settle a dispute in a faraway village. His sons wanted to go with him, but the king feared there might be a battle along the way. When the sons argued that their enemies might see the king's absence as an opportunity to attack, he devised a plan to ensure everyone's safety. He would leave his sword with his children and spread the word across the realm. His enemies would think the sons as invincible as the father if they brandished the legendary blade. The king went on his business and upon his return found his entire castle in mourning. An argument had arisen between the 2 brothers about which of them was the better warrior and more worthy of wielding their father's sword. In their dispute, the oldest son struck his little brother with a blade. The cadet did not survive his injuries, but he did live long enough to see his father one last time. After holding his son through his last breaths, the king took the sword and threw it into the sea so that no one would ever have to suffer its curse.
That's it?
That's how it ends.
You will forgive me for asking what may seem obvious, but I prefer to deal in certainties. What was the moral of this story?
Ah, I don't think there's a moral. Nothing that deep. If you left a weapon with someone so they could defend themselves and you found out they were killing each other with it, you'd probably want to take it back or get rid of it. It's just common sense, really. But then again, maybe I missed the point entirely. Maybe it's about something else. Ah, here's our waitress. I'm starving.
Good evening, gentlemen. Are you ready to order?
Oh, yes, we're famished. I'll let my friend here order first.
I will have the Kung Pao chicken.
You're a wise man.
File number 233. Interview with Inez Tabib, Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs. Location, White House, Washington, D.C.
Thank you for seeing me, Ms. Tabib.
I'm the one who called, so thank you. It's a pleasure to finally meet you. I hope you have no reservations about a woman's taking over this job.
To which aspect of the situation are you referring? Do I have reservations about women working in general? About women holding positions of power? About women making decisions about sending men or other women to their deaths? My answer will be the same to all three questions. A resounding no. And if I had such reservations, I would probably be more focused on the fact that a woman is now the commander-in-chief of the United States Armed Forces than on the gender of her advisors. Speaking of the president, how is she?
She's good. Still settling in. She wanted to thank you in person, but it'll have to wait a bit.
Thank me?
We had a good campaign, but it's no secret that we have your project to thank for such a landslide. You changed the world, starting with the president.
I did nothing of the sort. The former president could have handled things differently. He made his own bed.
That sounds an awful lot like, good for him, he got what he deserved. Would you have handled things differently?
I am not, was not, and never will be president of the United States. It does not really matter what I would have or would not have done in his place.
Fine. Don't tell me. I can tell you what I would have done differently. I wouldn't have hidden that, how do you call the alien device? Is it a she or an it?
To the people involved, it is she.
Well, I wouldn't have hidden her. I would have parked her in front of the White House for everyone to see.
Your predecessor was concerned that other governments would react unfavorably to a show of strength.
I know. It never made sense to me. He would have had to take her out at some point, wouldn't he? Anyway, she's out now. I don't think there's a single person on the planet that hasn't heard about it. It's really a game changer, you know. The ramifications are just endless.
I wish you were right. Unfortunately, I believe people will soon go back about their business as if nothing ever happened.
That's a little cynical, don't you think? Of course, people will more or less keep doing what they were doing. Aliens or not, they need to work, eat, sleep, send the children to school, take out the garbage. Most of their days never going to change, no matter what. I suppose that's why people are disenchanted with politics. They expect whoever they elect to change their lives. Anyway, that's not what matters. Right now, all over the Earth, there are little children staring up at the stars, wondering if whoever built that robot is from there or there or there. They might grow up to be astronauts, engineers. Anything that discovery inspires them to be. 20 years from now, one of these kids might build a new kind of engine, that allows us to travel outside our solar system, all because he saw that robot as a child. Every major religion has to adjust to this revelation. Whatever God you believe in can't just be about humans anymore. He, or she, has to be a God for the whole universe. Heaven, hell, nirvana, whatever. All these things have to be rethought, reshaped. Fundamentalists are simply denying the whole thing ever happened, but for everyone else, the world is a different place than it was before that crater in Denver. Even the president has to tweak her speeches to acknowledge the fact that there are other sentient life forms in the universe. You'd be surprised how hard it is to fit God and aliens in the same sentence without sounding corny. Most importantly, everyone, including world leaders, now knows there are beings out there capable of building formidable weapons so advanced that we probably would not stand a chance if they chose to attack us.
They would eradicate us. They could probably do it from a distance.
Exactly. It's a reality check for everyone, and it makes all our territorial or trade disputes seem just a little pettier. It wasn't a cataclysm, like an asteroid hitting the Earth or anything like that, but it was a traumatic moment. And traumatic moments have a way of bringing people together. I think this is changing the way we view ourselves. That change may be slow and imperceptible, but it's happening, I guarantee it.
I sincerely hope you were correct. My deepest wish is for this discovery to redefine alterity for all of us.
Alterity?
The concept of otherness. What I am is very much a function of what I am not. If the other is the Muslim world, then I am the Judeo-Christian world. If the other is from thousands of light years away, I am simply human. Redefine alterity, and you can erase boundaries.
See, I knew you weren't that cynical. While you're here, the president wanted me to touch base with you, see what you thought a good timeline would be to get her back.
When I told your predecessor it was not a permanent solution, I did not mean we could get it back whenever we wanted. It has only been 4 months.
I know. It's just, there's a lot happening right now. The president just wants to know what her options are.
I am aware of no significant technological development in the last 3 months, none that pertain to our deep-sea retrieval capabilities anyway. You can tell the president her options are exactly what they were yesterday. Or 4 months ago, or before we ever heard of that giant hand in South Dakota.
I told her you'd say that. Are you sure there's nothing we can do?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes, I am sure there is nothing we can do.
How about this? Are you sure there's nothing anyone else can do to get it back? Having lost the robot is one thing, but I'd hate to see her show up on television with a Chinese flag painted on her chest.
Like I said, I am unaware of any such scientific or technological development. I would be surprised if the Chinese or anyone else had made any significant progress in that area without anyone else knowing about it. That being said, it is not entirely out of the realm of possibilities.
How would you go about making sure someone else doesn't get it out first?
You cannot stop anyone from grabbing it if you cannot reach that depth yourself. I would strongly suggest multiplying federal funding for research in deep-sea exploration by, shall we say, 1,000-fold, if you have not already. I am absolutely certain other governments have done so before the first piece ever hit the bottom of the ocean.
You make it sound like this is a race.
I do. It is.
So you're saying this is the space race all over again. We're racing with the Russians and God knows who else to the far depths of the Earth, and whoever gets there first wins it all. Is that the gist of it?
Unless you find a way to turn enemy into ally, that sums it up quite well.
Are you suggesting we work with Russia on this thing?
I cannot tell you if you should, only that you could. Most people forgot, but in 1963, Kennedy did offer to cooperate with Moscow to reach the moon. Had he not met with such an untimely death, the first lunar landing might have been a joint venture between the United States and the USSR.
Somehow, I don't see that happening.
I suppose that is what you meant by slow and imperceptible change. Is there anything else I can help you with? I am on a fairly tight schedule.
No, I guess not. Not unless you can get North Korea to shut down their nuclear program.
What have they done this time?
Third underground test this year. Only this one looks like the real thing. In the past, they would just blow up a whole lot of explosives underground to make us think they had nukes. This time's different. Japan has detected radiation at the site. With anyone else, we'd play the strength card and threaten to level the entire country. But they don't really seem to care. I'm not sure where that leaves us.
A preemptive strike?
As far as the president is concerned, that's what you call an act of war, if you're the one making it.
Then I'm afraid I have nothing to offer. It pains me to say it, but I have always been thoroughly bewildered by North Korea. They cannot be threatened, as they feel themselves superior to the one making the threat. They cannot be reasoned with, and, most importantly, they are 100% convinced of their righteousness, so they cannot be bought. Megalomaniacs with delusions of grandeur are notoriously difficult to handle, but how generations of them can follow one another is beyond me.
I'm sorry. My mind was drifting. I was thinking about racing the Russians to the trench. It's going to be hard to make a good speech out of that. We choose to go to the ocean. We choose to go to the bottom of the ocean in this decade and do the other things.
Maybe you should leave the speech writing to others.
File number 237. Interview with Vincent Couture. Unemployed. Location: La Fontaine Park, Montreal, Canada.
Please sit down, Mr. Couture.
We could have gone to my place. It's cold for a picnic.
I have tried my best to hide the identity of everyone involved in our project, but after the incident, I prefer to discuss this in a public location.
You're worried someone bugged my apartment?
I cannot discard the possibility. Besides, this park is lovely in the fall. Did you receive my message?
I'm not sure I'd call that a message, but yeah, I received the two words you sent me. It's pretty cool.
Define cool.
Cool is that at some point there might have been more of these giant robots on Earth, 11 more to be precise.
How
would I know? Well, the first word you sent, Tita, means big in Hattic. Hattic was spoken about 5,000 years ago in Anatolia. That's more or less Turkey today. That word was borrowed by the folks living west of there, and in Greek you end up with the word Titan. In Greek mythology, the Titans are children of Gaia and Uranus. That's also cool. Do you get it? They're children of the Earth and the sky. They must have known where they came from somehow. There are 12 of them, 6 males and 6 females. I don't know all their names by heart, but I know which one we found. The other word you sent, Demis, looks a whole lot like what we call Proto-Indo-European, which we believe was spoken right around there at the time. If it is P-I-E, then that D will eventually turn into a T, and by the time you get to ancient Greek, you end up with Themis, one of the Titans.
I am not familiar with the name.
You've seen her 1,000 times. She's blindfolded, holding a scale in one hand and a sword in the other.
Is that who we call Lady Justice?
More or less. The statues in front of courthouses are fairly modern. They're usually a mixture of Themis and Justitia, the Roman equivalent. What's the saying? Justice is blind? Well, now we know why she doesn't have eyes. I don't think justice is the right word, though. She represents something bigger, something like divine law. That's probably what Bemis meant 5,000 years ago already. I'm pretty sure that Dharma in Sanskrit is from the same word, and it means cosmic order, what keeps the universe together. Her daughter, Dike, is the Greek goddess of justice.
She had a daughter?
Well, obviously she doesn't have a real daughter. I don't think there's a mini robot